This is a summary of Reinventing Coaching by bestbookbriefings.com. Reinventing Coaching. A new business and life approach for coaching yourself and others to find your zone. By Anas Aldehoud and Mohamed Elsadoui. Driving your own carriage. The term coaching has come to mean various things across the years. These days, it's easy to find a coach for just about every aspect of our lives. Libraries are stocked full with coaching books, each with their own perspective. It's easy to get lost in all this information, that's why it's crucial that we remember the true meaning of the word. The word coach comes from the French coach, the German kocsi, and the Hungarian kocsi, words that were used in the 16th century to describe a four-wheeled carriage. Later on, Oxford University would set its definition as a teacher who carries a student through their exam. In sports, coaches would carry athletes through competitions, etc. That's it. A coach is a carriage that carries you from where you are to your very best self. But who's driving the carriage? Common sense dictates that it would be the coach who takes the reins, but that's actually not the case. Good coaches take a back seat to observe your driving, and they intervene only when they have to. They won't hand you a map and ask you to follow it. They'll help you discover your personal road. Through asking the right questions, coaches reveal your values, helping you set the right goals for a fulfilled life. Over time, this simple role has shifted. Many people today confuse it with counseling or training. Some coaches even impose their own values onto their clients. The field has become so muddled that its true purpose is almost gone. Here's where coaching comes into the picture. A model that we designed from years of coaching experience. Coaching brings coaching back to its basics and beyond, enabling the coachee to achieve a greater level of self-awareness. The goal of coaching is not only to help you set and achieve your own goals, but to awaken your inner guide, an intuitive part of you that knows more than you could imagine, what makes you who you really are. What would it take to live a life that's wholly happy and satisfied and authentic? It takes courage to drive your own carriage, but it's worth it. Part 1, From Coaching to Coaching, Chapter 1, Why Make the Leap? With the turn of the century, the field of coaching has been facing new challenges that affect it on a fundamental level. What challenges does the coaching industry face today? Challenge number 1, confusion. Coaching, psychotherapy, and training are three fields that are often confused with each other, but they each serve a different function in society. Psychotherapy is the process that's concerned with healing the trauma of the past and the pain of the present. People seek out psychiatrists when they struggle with certain things that affect their mental health. An educational background in clinical psychology is required to deal with these issues. Any attempt at coaching a mental health issue can backfire. Despite this, many coaches claim to specialize in things like anxiety, depression, and even addiction. Training is the process of sharing the knowledge of an expert through seminars or workshops. Since coaches act as the facilitator for a coachee's inner wisdom, they don't need to be an expert themselves. While training can be more effective in transferring relevant information, one study shows that one-on-one coaching can be more effective at boosting productivity by more than 60%. While these three fields have some elements in common, we've gone so far to the point where we can't distinguish between them. But coaching is a totally new model that's free of any confusion or association with other social fields. It's not about solving problems or sharing knowledge. Challenge number 2, dependency. A coach's success depends on their ability to develop a relationship with the coachee that fosters the space for them to learn and discover more about themselves. A good coach must prepare the coachee to become self-reliant and independent. If this isn't the case, chances are high that the coachee has developed a dependent relationship with them. More and more people are becoming reliant on their coaches to the point that they can't make decisions at all without consulting them. The coaching model is built to be independent of any individual coach's personality. Your life is under your control. Challenge number 3, the fear of feedback. The golden rule of coaching is to never tell, to resist the urge to give feedback or advice. How come? 1. The things we need to know are already within us. Any advice that a coach gives represents their own perception of the way things should be. Although they may be more knowledgeable in certain topics, No one knows you better than you do. Point 2. Advice activates our subconscious alarm bells. A conversation that is based on telling opens the door for judgment. Instead of having a healthy discussion about what we can improve, it puts us on the defensive, and it can hurt more than it helps. It takes a lot of skill and experience to embrace someone's worldview and allow them to express themselves, even for coaches. Challenge number 4. Too many coaches. The focus of coaching is always changing, and it's a highly unregulated industry. There's no set certification process, and there's no guide to consult when things go wrong. Which ones are credible? What scientific research are they based on? In comparison, the Coring model is built on the theory of positive psychology, as supported by evidence-based research. Chapter 2, The Science and Values of Coring. Coring is defined as a method designed to expand self-awareness by helping people make actions that are in line with their core personalities. Through this, each person is guided to an environment in which they will thrive, while still preserving their individuality. The goal isn't to change or fix people, but to reveal their true potential. With this in mind, we've developed the 6 values of Coring. 1. Self-efficacy, a person's belief in what they can do and what they can control. Self-efficacy is a major factor of success. It helps us recover from failure and overcome difficulties. Studies have also proven that it has mental and physical benefits. Put simply, it's important for us to believe that we can accomplish whatever we set our minds to. At the same time, the belief that we should be able to do anything can lead to us setting unrealistic goals that lead to disappointment. There are things that we can do, and things that we can't do. We can always improve, but that depends on who we are to begin with. The only thing that we can't change are our personalities. Before we can believe in ourselves, we must first know ourselves. Point 2. Self-awareness. To become aware, one must first begin by observing. This is easier said than done. Our worldview is always subjective. The way we see the world and make sense of it is colored by our life experiences. But it's important to be aware that you are not your emotions. Your feelings are things that you can evaluate and change. When you control your emotions, you are moving from the subjective to the objective. Self-awareness encompasses every part of who you are, from your strengths to your weaknesses, your motives, and your values, and they are objects, too, just like your emotions. Through the Coring process, we develop the psychological muscle to deal with the complex world. Our inner worlds improve along with our careers and relationships. Coring will challenge your thinking and help you see your experiences and behavior from another perspective. Awareness isn't a fixed value, it's a whole that you continuously add onto your whole life. What you learned yesterday becomes a part of your worldview today, and what you learn today becomes a part of your worldview tomorrow. When you come from a place of awareness, you can only move forward. But this journey of self-discovery isn't easy. You might find things about yourself that you don't like, things that you wish you could change. Point 3. Self-acceptance. Our world constantly pressures us to become better people. There's always a new diet, a new book, a new course. Everything seems to be built to remind us that who we are isn't enough. So we try, but we hit a wall, and end up losing faith in ourselves. Change is hard. It takes a lot of time, energy, and money to change even the smallest thing, but what if you used those resources to build on the strengths that you already had? Don't waste your life trying to change everything, and miss out on the chance to know who you truly are. Self-acceptance doesn't mean being lazy and stagnant, it's about confronting the ultimate truth. You're a human being who is always going to be imperfect, and that's okay. You're not missing any parts. Let go of your ideals of who you should be, and ground yourself in reality. Only then can you begin to improve yourself. Point 4. Strengths. Positive psychology tells us that every person is born with a unique and authentic combination of strengths and weaknesses, and that both make us who we are. Each person's greatest growth opportunity can be found in their greatest strengths. Top achievers use their natural talents as the raw material of their success. It's better to work on developing strengths than correcting weaknesses. Point 5. Happiness. There's no guidebook to a happy life. When it comes to your life, you're the only judge that matters.
Once you have a better understanding of yourself, You can design a life that embraces both your meaning and your pleasure, making it truly authentic to yourself. Happiness that's built on self-awareness can be both a goal and the fuel to our success. You might think that successful people are happy because of their success, but it's actually the other way around. Happiness can motivate us to delay our gratification, focus on promotion goals, and generally improve our productivity. 6. Action. Inquiring, as in life, action is the only thing that really matters. All our other values look great on paper, but they stay on paper unless you act. Actions have a ripple effect. Just one positive action can improve every other area of your life. The key is to pick an action that fits with your character and your strengths. That way, it takes less effort and brings you more joy. In the same way, just one negative action can be harmful as well. Taking actions that don't align with who you are will leave you doubting yourself and hesitating to ever act. Self-awareness creates happiness, which fuels actions that bring about more happiness. Actions and strengths build self-efficacy, which comes back to influence your actions as well. None of them work alone. By going through the coring process, you'll internalize all 6 of them into your daily life. Part 2. Mining to the core. For the first phase of coring, you're going to be driving a carriage into a metaphorical mine. Inside it, you will find everything that makes you who you are. Chapter 3. The story. As you begin your journey, you'll find that the mine is crowded with memories of your life story. Every detail has had a hand in shaping who you are today, and only by mining it can you be prepared to face your future. For your first foray into the mine, all you'll need is a notebook and a pen. Reflect on your life and put the puzzle pieces together. Don't be overwhelmed. We've prepared some questions to guide you on your way. Use them as you will, and write down what you find. Childhood. Think back and remember as far back as you can. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the saddest and 10 being the happiest, how content were you as a kid? What made you that way? What was your happiest memory? Your saddest? Did you find it easier for you to connect with your father or your mother? Why? Was one of them more difficult? How did they motivate and reward you? Does that style still work today? How did your parents brag about you? What about you were they proud of? Is it still a part of you now? What is the biggest lesson your parents taught you? Is something you still hold on to today? What kind of person did you want to be when you grew up? Did you do it? Why or why not? Did you ever feel different as a child? Were there times when you felt like you understood something that no one else did? Teenage life. As you became a teenager, how did your relationships with the people around you change? If you could travel back in time to that time, what would you do differently? If you knew what you knew now, what would change? It's amazing what a little more self-awareness can do. Education. How happy were you throughout your education? What were your happiest times? What subjects did you excel at, and what about it made it that way? Did you enjoy it? Did you care about the content? Was the teacher good at their job? What did they do right? Do you still engage with those subjects in your life today? Did you work hard to get good grades, or did you only aim to pass your exams? Did you study on your own, with other people, or with a tutor? What extracurricular activities did you pursue? Were you a popular kid? If so, do you stay in touch with any of your friends? If you had a college education, what major did you choose? Why? Family. What's the best thing about your family / marriage? What would you change, and what are you committed to? How do you spend your holidays? Are your family vacations with or from your family? If you're in a relationship, why? When do you feel the most aligned with your partner, and when do you feel the least aligned? Do you make the most compromises? How do you make important decisions together? How do you show your love to your family? Career? How satisfied are you with your work? What exactly do you do as a job? List down 10 daily activities. Which of these do you enjoy, and which do you hate? What was your biggest work achievement? What does it say about who you are? Have you ever felt like you were born to do something? What expectations did you have for your future career? How differently did things turn out? When are you at your top performance? When are you at your lowest? Leadership. What is your relationship with your subordinates like? Are you more a mentor or an authoritarian? What do you like about your role, and what do you struggle with? If you're a manager, What aspect of your job do you excel at? Strategizing, getting results, building relationships, or development? Financial life. How good are you at managing your money? Be honest. What does money mean to you? What are you willing to give up in order to have more of it? What are you saving your money for? If you had $1 million right now, what would you spend it on? If your money wasn't a factor you had to consider, what would you be doing with your life? Shocks and pain. Recall the hardest times of your life. How was what you've gone through rough changed you? Has it been for the better or the worse? Community service. Have you ever volunteered for a cause? When it comes to a cause you support, would you rather donate money, spend your time working on it, or spread awareness? Do you believe that the less fortunate need help? If so, what type of help would matter the most? With what you know about yourself, what do you think you can offer the world to make it a better place? Spirituality. What role does spirituality play in your daily life? What more do you aspire to? Do you believe in a higher power? If so, what is it? How does this belief serve you, and how does it affect the other aspects of your life? General behavior and personality. On a scale of 1 to 10, how well do you know yourself? What are your talents? What makes you unique? Who are your role models, and why? Do you like to plan things, or do you live day by day? Are your goals important to you? Are you an emotional or a practical person? What is the best thing about being that way? How do you deal with arguments? Can you find yourself having a long, constructive debate, or are they draining to you? Are you competitive? How do you deal with losing? Do you seek out challenges, or do you always look for the easiest way to get something done? What aspect of your life today is making you the happiest? Remember to relate all of these questions to your life. There are no right answers. This is your story. Chapter 4. The goggles. If you've answered these questions, you'll find that you've gathered many pieces of your story. Some pieces, you've always been aware of, and others, you're seeing for the very first time. But even though what you have now is a complex narrative that expresses your story, it's still only told from the first-person perspective. How accurate can your self-perception really be? Studies show results of self-assessment tests can be as low as 29%. When we rely only on our own judgment, we run the risk of deluding ourselves. But that doesn't mean our self-perception is always wrong, only that there's more to the story than we know. Look inside your carriage, and you'll find a pair of magical goggles designed to show you your life through another person's eyes. As you settle in the darkness of the mind, you'll see that everything becomes clear. Follow these steps and picture the person closest to you, let's say it's your partner. 2. Put on the goggles and ask yourself, how does my partner see me? Are you really that good of a listener? 3. Once you've spent enough time looking through your partner's eyes, you can move on to the next person. Other people who spend time with you and see you in different situations, like your family, your friends, your co-workers, etc. This exercise is actually not to show you how other people see you, but you think other people see you. Remember that you're doing this not to pass judgment on yourself or on other people, but to broaden your awareness. The things that you may learn from this exercise will help you improve your relationships and ability to communicate with others. Chapter 5. The X-Ray. By now, you might think that you've got a pretty good understanding of yourself. But to get to your very core, you'll need an X-ray in the form of personality assessment tests. These are the fastest way to see an objective, more simplified version of yourself, and they can reveal even more things about you that you didn't know. There are many serviceable personality assessment tests out there, but for our purposes, we will be exploring the 3 most widely used ones, since they are credible and easily accessible. CliftonStrengths. This test measures your 34 talent themes and arranges them in the order of their intensity. These talent themes come in 4 categories: executing, influencing, relationship building, and strategic thinking. The combination of your top 5 talents creates a signature theme that is wholly unique to you. The report will elaborate on your top themes, giving action points for utilizing your unique abilities to improve your life. You can find this test at www.gallup.com/CliftonStrengths/Myers-Briggs type indicator. This test identifies the individualistic differences between people for the purpose of better understanding each other and ourselves. Where CliftonStrengths is used to measure talents MBTI is used for measuring preferences. It divides people into 16 psychological type combinations by measuring four categories of preferences: extroversion or introversion, sensing or intuition, feeling or thinking, and judging or perceiving. The report is a four-letter psychological type IST for introverted, sensing, thinking, and perceiving, for example. The report allows you to compare your type with someone else's in order to learn how to better relate with them. It also discusses topics like staying motivated, giving and receiving feedback, and how to express yourself creatively. Lastly, it discusses your preferred work environment and the job that might best suit you. There are several free versions of this test, but the most famous one can be found at www.16personalities.com/article/r-theory.diskprofile. This test is more concerned with how you behave in your relationships at work. According to this test, there are four dimensions of behavior, which influence a person's motivations and goals: dominance, influence, steadiness, and conscientiousness. Behaviors can be situational, so there are many versions of this test that you can take, all available at www.diskprofile.com. Part 3. The activation phase. You can't spend the rest of your life in an imaginary mind. To be free, you'll have to step out into the real world. It's going to be a challenge, but by now you're well equipped. You've got what it takes, so get ready. Chapter 6. Welcome to the jungle. To get a better picture of who are in the real world, we need to go through the following steps. Step 1. Building your core list. 1. What makes you stand out? Strengths. What makes you happy and gives you energy? What strengths did your assessment test highlight? Traits. What qualities do you or others love about yourself? Work fit. What do you enjoy doing so much that you work on it for hours nonstop? Impact. What effect do you have on your environment and on other people? 2. What makes you move? Energy zone. What environment are you the most comfortable and effective in? Motivators. What habits or quotes get you up and going in the morning? Values. What is your first priority? By what standard do you evaluate everything? 3. What slows you down? Weaknesses. What things do you not like to do? What drains your energy? Aggravators. What little things bother you, even if others don't notice them? Internal conflict. What values, motives, and traits clash with each other, preventing you from getting things done? Difficult people. What kinds of personalities do you have trouble working with? Stoppers. What kinds of incidents or situations ruin your mood and stop you from moving forward? 4. How does your brain work? Type. Are you a doer, a thinking, an influencer? Are you emotion-driven or tactical? Decision-making and creative processes. What do you like to do when it's time to make a decision or to create? How do you get things done? What kind of leader do you see yourself as? What is the optimal way for you to learn something? 5. How do you interact with others? Your personal billboard. If you could walk around with a billboard that had a list of things that you wish people knew about you before they interacted with you, what would be on it? Other billboards. What do you wish other people would have on their billboards? What would you like to know to improve your relationships with them? Effective partners. What kinds of people do you need to work with in order to get the most done? We're looking for personality traits, not specific people. External conflict. With what you know about yourself, what things can cause conflict with other people? Congratulations. You've built the foundation of your core list. Checking your backpack. The core list is about your internal world, but your backpack is about the external. While you can't change the things on your core list, the things in your backpack are easily changeable. Assets: everything you own, along with your businesses and investments. Connections: the people in your life who can empower you and help you succeed. Knowledge: your education and your skills, from your degrees to the books you read. List everything you know and everything you know how to do. Surroundings: the area you live in. Does it provide you with any opportunities or facilities that you can use to further your goal? Technology: things like computers, smartphones, and the internet have made things easier for everyone. Your image: the way you present yourself, in public and online. Once you've listed down what you have, assess how much more you might need, and make it your goal to obtain it. Chapter 7. The habit at dot now that you're equipped. It's very important to find a habit at where you can live a happy, fulfilled life, and you feel like you belong. It doesn't have to be a place, it can be a passion, a cause we care about, or a job that we love doing. When you're in your habitat, you feel more capable and less stressed. You feel like you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. When you're out of it, you're lost, and things start to fall apart. We're all valuable, but unless you place ourselves in the right habitat, no one will acknowledge our worth. Where you decide to place yourself is important. Climb the mountain. The first step to finding your habitat is to climb the mountain, look at things from a bigger scale, and see all the available habitats for yourself. Don't let any external factors get in the way of your thinking. Peer pressure, the demands of family, and society's norms can influence our decisions and push us away from the best habitat we can be in. Keep climbing the mountain, see each possible habitat for what it is, and distance yourself from your thoughts and emotions. Let your instincts drive you. Potential habitats. List every available habitat you've seen so far, and then account for your circumstances. Given your means and capabilities, which ones are really available to you? Consider what value you can add by being there with your strengths and resources. Comfort zones are not habitats. No one gains anything from you sitting on the couch and watching Netflix. Spot your habitat. You'll find that you might not stick with the first habitat that you explore. You might need to experiment with different habitats to see how things go. Most success stories begin with exploring. Never stop and keep experimenting. When you allow yourself to try, you allow your core to be activated. It goes without saying that your habitat needs to be in harmony with your core list. While you're evaluating, list down your dream habitats and use them as guidelines for spotting the right one for you. In reality, we don't choose our habitats, we discover them. It's the one thing that no one else can design for you. You have to find it by yourself. It may take you a long time and a lot of effort to find it, but it's worth it. Once you find it, you'll find that every aspect of your life will improve. Chapter 8, Taking the Leap. Now that you're at the top of the mountain and you know what habitat you want to be, it's time to take the leap. Take action. It isn't easy. We tend to prefer to stay right where we are, but it's necessary. Now that you've seen what's out there, why not? Use your habitat as your endpoint, the perfect state that you want to work towards. List down everything you can do to get closer to that place. Achieving any of them is a sure way of uplifting your life. If you haven't found it yet, use your core list to get a better idea of what you want. How can you use what you have to help others while still developing them? What tasks do you enjoy doing, and in what ways do they give you energy? What motivates you, and what do you value? How can you put some distance between you and your stressors and aggravators? What actions will be compatible with the type of person that you are? How can you lead, learn, and partner with others? Make a checklist of all these things and use them to evaluate your possible actions. The more you understand yourself, the more you'll know how to begin executing on your plan. Highly disciplined people use deadlines to get themselves motivated. People who are worried about failure will tend to avoid negative feedback. There's a whole range of approaches, and only you can determine what is best for you. It may take some trial and error, but you already know you can get there. It will take more than one action, but take it one step at a time, and you'll get there.